Thanks again for listening to the Park Hills Podcast. If you want more information on the things we're doing, go to parkhillschurch.com or the Park Hills Church app. So at the end of 1 Peter 2, we have this concept that's sometimes difficult for us to recognize and figure out how to manage as Christians in today's world, right? Peter tells us to be subject for the Lord's sake to every human institution. And I think this message, I think it made sense to most people. I had a lot of people that thanked me after it, but I had some people that misunderstood a little bit of what was being said. They thought being subject to means you have to do whatever they say all the time. And I said early in the sermon, no. Obedience does not necessarily mean be subject to. If someone's asking you to do evil, you don't have to do that. But I think what we wanted to do for this podcast, Alex and I wanted to kind of walk with you through, I don't know, maybe a pastoral, I don't want to say it's a theology, but maybe it's something approaching a pastoral theology of maybe politics, but even that's going to probably sell it short. How would you describe it?
Yeah, I would say this is the wisdom literature of how we understand how you and I approach the ballot box.
That's good.
And there's some differences that you and I are going to have, but and you know certainly neither of us are going to say vote for this individual candidate or something like that. That's not
right.
Where we're at.
Right.
But we are going to share the things that go through our heads as we think through who am I going to vote for, which I think it's even, we just have to start with the fact that it's mind-blowing that we even get to vote.
Correct.
That is unique to history and culture. There, most of history had no voting, was not democratic, whether it's true democracy or democratic republic that we live in. That was like never the case. You never chose or had a say in who leads over you. And even in our world today, not everyone in our world that exists has a choice. So
correct.
But Peter writes this when he's ruled by Nero, who was a conquering emperor. Remember, it wasn't just—
And a terrible person.
Yeah, yeah. And remember, it wasn't just his emperor that he didn't like. It was, there were rulers of the Jewish people, and Nero came and conquered them and said, I'm going to impose my rule over you because I'm stronger in a military sense. And Peter says, be subject to them. So, interesting.
Which would be crazy for an American to hear.
Right.
If we just put this in the context of what it's talking about, I don't know that we trust our government to not be doing evil. Just based on what I hear from people. I often hear from people, the government is evil, everything's evil about it. But what he's saying is be subject to every institution. And I look at Nero and I go, Nero's not doing good. But what Peter's point is that thing, that institution, that government that is set up is there to punish those who do evil and to praise those who do good. When it's functioning well, then that's what it looks like. And so regardless of whether it's functioning well or not functioning well, there is something about us being subject to the idea that God has allowed this thing to exist. He hasn't wiped it off the face of the earth. So we can trust God as our ultimate authority. And then underneath that, understand that we are subject in some ways to the government that we serve. Meaning, as long as they are doing the things that this passage is saying, punishing evil, doing good, we can praise that. In the moments that that's not happening, we have every right to speak our mind, but we're going to deal with the consequences that come.
Yeah.
Which is part of what Peter does in this passage, right? He's speaking out that Christ is the one true God. He's the king of the universe, and he pays for it with his life, and he's subject to that government in that sense.
Yeah, and this we mentioned the Bible Project a lot, but there are two videos on the life of, what is it, the life of the exile,
yes,
or the way of the, I think they call it exile, and then the way of the exile, and that— It's kind of that Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego type of thing. Like they're subject to that ruler where they say, yeah, we're going to live under your rule. We're going to find a way that makes this work, like with the vegetable thing. You know, hey, you want us to do this, but we don't feel like we can do that in good conscience. Is there a way we can work this out?
Yep.
And they work it out. And then later with the image set up. Hey, is there a way that we can work this out? No, this isn't going to work well. All right, we're ready for the persecution. What's the consequence? Just let us know.
I think that's a fantastic illustration, because if you just stop and think about it, the food aspect doesn't necessarily lead to idolatry. It's just a matter of, you have a preference for food. We have a different preference. Can we do our thing and let's see how this plays out, versus bowing down to a statue? I can't cross that line.
Right. Right. Well,
and they're subject.
Yeah. Yeah. They found compromise where they could. Like, they found a system that worked. I shouldn't say compromise. It's kind of the wrong word. But they found the system.
I think it's a good word. It just is so loaded in today's culture. Right. Yeah, I'm with you.
They're not morally compromising. They're just finding a way for everyone to be happy in when they can.
Yeah.
And when it works out and when they can, they're like, great, we'll do this. And again, God blesses it.
Yep.
But in the moments where they can't work it out, they say, we're not going to bow to you. Like, is there another way to do this? Can, essentially, I'm thinking they're saying, can we have an exemption? And the king's like, no, everybody or anyone who doesn't do this dies. And they're like, okay, we're ready. We're prepared.
Burn us up.
Yeah.
And if we die, we're never bowing to you.
Yeah.
And if we're saved, that's because our God is greater than your statue.
Yeah.
I mean, I wish every Christian felt that way.
Yeah. And what a great statement that they say. They say, you know, if we know that our God is able to rescue us, but even if he doesn't, mm-hmm. know that we still serve him and we will not bow down to your statue. And like that statement, even if he doesn't, like, we're ready for the consequences. And I think that's what it means to be subject to that authority. Now, I think what's really then applicable to us today is that we live in a much gentler society towards what it means to be a believer than they did then. And we're starting to feel pressure, but even our system has systems within it to voice our displeasure.
Yes.
And like, what an amazing privilege that is, that when Christians do feel that pressure, we can, like, the compromise or the, like, hey, how can we work this out is already built in. Like, right. There's ways to appeal. There's ways to protest. There's ways to, you can write your Senate. Like, you can do many, many things instead of just, like, we don't have to immediately go to where these guys had to go, rightfully so, but immediately go to, like, all right, we'll accept the consequences. Just do what you got to do.
Yeah.
That's a privilege for us.
Yeah, and we live in a country and a system that actually, at least up until now, as we're recording this, up to this point, nothing has changed. But we live in a system in a world that allows us to have free speech even against our government. If we don't appreciate something that's being done, we can do so, but we will accept the consequences as they come. And I think that was the nuance that people missed maybe in the sermon. Mm-hmm. So coming back to what you said a little bit ago and kind of what we're going to do here, like I said, it's something approaching a pastoral theology or something, you know, the right approach to how we approach the ballot, I think is what you said. And I think that's really good. We live in a democratic republic. So when you have someone in the next few months, because as we're recording this, we're leaning up to election day. You know, we're basically 6 months away, somewhere thereabouts, from electing the next government of the United States. Mm-hmm. So that's president, you know, a third of the senators, and the entire House of Representatives, along with a bunch of state officials and such and such. It is very tense, as it was in 2020, it was in 2016. There have been very few elections that are not tense in my 20 something years of voting. And so what do we do? How do you approach it? But we don't live in a democracy. We live in a democratic republic. So when someone's going to freak out about the Electoral College this year, you can say, we live in a democratic republic. When someone says, well, my voice wasn't heard, we live in a democratic republic. There is something to say for how districts are set up. There's something to say for what state you live in. There's something to say, like, all of those factors matter. But it doesn't mean that we aren't allowed to have opinions. It just means there's a really good chance that your opinion is not going to matter where you live, and you're still supposed to vote anyway.
Yeah, and what a privilege. I think if there's one thing that can come out of this for me, what a privilege we have to live in such a society.
Awesome.
Because, you know, like we said, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, no way. This was not their reality. And, you know—
There was no ballot box for Nebuchadnezzar.
right. And in America today, out of all the nations of the world— and I don't have a lot of experience with a lot of other nations, but the religious freedoms we do have are pretty significant when you compare mm-hmm. them to the rest of the world.
Even the First Amendment, free speech, does not exist in almost any other country in the world.
Yeah,
Australia does not have free speech. England does not actually have free speech. I've talked to people from England who say, your First Amendment and your Second Amendment are wild, and I can't believe you have those. and then they're a little jealous that we have them.
Yeah. Yeah. And we're not like, ah, take them away. It doesn't matter. But just like, remember, oh man, this is actually pretty great.
Yeah.
Like,
my response is usually, that's why we broke away from you. Yeah. We're back. No.
Yeah. But I mean, the fact that we can even have this conversation the way we do, because, yes. You know, I have a personal friend that lived in a Southeast Asian country and he had to flee because his government ordered his arrest and execution. And he and I went to school together. He hung out with me in my apartment, and I'm hearing his story. Actually, he asked me to edit his testimony, but we had to write our testimony for a class. And he's like, my English isn't very good. Can you edit this for me? And I was like, sure. And I'm like reading this while he's eating soup in my living room. Like, I'm reading the story of all the things he did to escape his country. And I'm like, no way. Like,
that's wild.
That's wild. And that is the reality to so many people in our world today.
Which I think is our first point.
Yeah.
We live in a great place.
Yeah.
It has its problems. It has a lot of issues. There's a lot of things that we're quote unquote fighting for and pushing back against.
Yep.
All of that is completely justified. It is a part of what makes America special. Do your thing, but understand you have it very good.
Yep.
Even if it's not going great for you right now, this is a unique place that we should be very proud of being a part of, and we should be excited about what God potentially can do with it in the future.
Yeah. Yeah. So many things that we have, and I'm not even going to get into like the material things and things like that. Just as we talk about like the political system, like the political freedoms and rights that we have right now are just, they are amazing. So I go to the ballot box remembering that, and then balancing that with, as amazing as this kingdom is that I live in right now, it's not my first kingdom.
Correct.
And that changes kind of my whole perspective on what I'm doing. Yeah, there's a lot of evil and there's a lot of bad things that this kingdom is doing. So I just remember, this is not my first kingdom. My first citizenship is somewhere else. Mm-hmm. And that kind of brings me a little bit of comfort too as I approach the ballot box.
Yeah, because even if I don't get my way, even if I vote for someone that I don't, you know, love everything about them, which I don't know if you've ever voted for someone you love everything about them.
No.
There's some people in our church that if I could vote for them, I would have loved voting for them, but I don't get a chance to do that because I live in a different county. But in the long run, every single person I've ever voted for has their downsides. So I'm doing so with this, not trepidation, but with this hope for something better down the road, but it is not my kingdom. This is not my home. God is in charge. And like you just said, coming back to then the 1 Peter 2 passage, we can be subject to this government because God is ultimately the authority. And we serve him first and foremost. And if the government tells us to do something that's not in line with what God would want us to do, we have every right to push back.
Yeah.
And suffer the consequences.
Yeah. And I love how you brought up the idea of hope. That because this kingdom is not my first kingdom, it's also not my first hope.
Yep.
And so that kind of grounds me in the sense of like, a lot of politicians will promise a lot of things, and they'll say, you know, you can trust me, or I bring, you know, I'm not going to be corrupt, or I'm going to do all these good things, or I'm going to make sure all this happens. And I think we can get caught up in hoping in a lot of those things. And a lot of those things are really good things. So I'm not even saying, you know, don't jump on that bandwagon. Politicians have accomplished some really, really great things. But my ultimate hope is not in this kingdom. Like I know it's going to let me down. I know there's going to be problems. I know there's going to be evil built into it. So if my first hope is not there, some of the solutions that so many people come up with, and even the definition of some of the problems that politicians come up with, I can step back a little bit and say, okay, that's not going to work out because I know sin is still going to exist in our world, and that's not going to fix the problem, or it's not going to fix the problem entirely. So, I'm not putting all my eggs in that basket.
Yep. I totally agree with you. So when I approach the ballot, the next thing I do, I think we're, like I said, we're building this out as we go. The next thing I do is I do my research, right? So I actually go through, you know, I'll usually test a couple of different, whether it be websites or whatever, I'll go to the individuals that I know I'm going to vote for. So how that starts for me, and you may not do this, but I totally do it. I go and look at the ballot for my district. So I live in Winnebago County. I will actually go online, and there's a couple different places to find it. And I'll type in, you know, I'll type in Google ballot for Winnebago, Illinois, you know, 2024. And it will show up with the ballot that I'm going to be allowed to vote. So this year it's going to have president, it's going to have state representative that I'm going to, that's in my district. It's going to have a state senator, a senator, and then all of the state positions below that. And then, you know, some county things, you know, usually there's some type of tariff or something that they're asking if they want to raise this for the school or whatever. So I read through all of those things and then I write down some names and the ones that I'm most likely going to start voting for in the first place. And I go and I research them and I go, all right, what are they doing? What are they not doing? Well, how have they voted in the past? If they're a brand new politician, what are they on the record as saying? What have they said? And every one of those guys or gals have absolutely a website somewhere that tells them their positions on things. Mm-hmm. And there's a number of positions that I feel very strongly about, pro-life being one of the big ones, which I think a lot of people then assume that I always vote a certain way. Pro-life is not necessarily only a Republican construct. That may shock some people. And ironically, there may be some people in that party who don't actually hold to a pro-life view. So mm-hmm. I'm very careful. That's one of the big ones I look at. I look at, positions on, I don't know. That's the big one I do, but there's other positions that I'm looking for. Just, all right, how do you feel about this? Freedom of speech is one of those. To what extent do you like freedom of speech and what does it look like? You know, if there's a cultural issue or two of the day, I want to know kind of where they're landing, what they're doing. And then as I approach that and kind of do my research, then I just sort of pray about it and I'm seeking peace in whatever I'm going to do here. What do you do?
Yeah. I mean, really similar. There's a great little website tool. It's called isidewith.com. And I'm looking at it right now as we're talking. And it's really good because it just brings up a lot of political issues and asks you how you feel about it. It has a lot of different nuanced views. And then it asks you to say how important this is to you, least, most. And then I'm not saying fill out the quiz and whatever it says, vote for that person. But this kind of helps you see who lands where. It kind of brings all of that together. So it's a good starting place for your research. It's like Wikipedia, right? Start with Wikipedia, but don't cite it in your research paper. Start with I Side With, and then go check out those candidates individually that kind of pull up from this. Because sometimes it's easy to find the presidential stuff, but some of the other stuff that goes down the line.
That's a great academic joke that most people won't get. But yeah. Start with Wikipedia, then don't cite it in your research because you'll be, you'll be laughed out of the room.
So I start there, but a concept I started thinking through in my own mind, and I think I've landed here, I like this, is, I hear a lot of people say, vote for the lesser of two evil. Well, first of all, I hear people say, you have to vote. If you don't vote, you can't complain. And I thought, a conscious choice to not vote is, to me, still considered a vote. A vote mm-hmm. for nobody is a vote. So that. And then two, a lot of people will tell me, well, you have to vote for the lesser of two evils. And I understand that, and I understand where they're coming from, and I think there's wisdom in that. However, I started approaching the ballot with the mindset of somebody on this ticket has to earn my vote. My vote belongs to me, not them. Mm-hmm. And I want to see who on there is earning my vote. Now, earning my vote doesn't, the standard that I use is not everything has to be exactly what I agree with. But is there someone on there that they take some sort of stance or they have some sort of thing about them where I say, you know what? That person has earned my vote. And that has really helped just me personally as I approach the ballot box, because then I say, like, no, I'm putting my name behind mm-hmm. this candidate. They've earned my vote for whatever reason, even if my threshold is lower for certain things or for certain positions. It's just to say, there's something in there that I can say, yes, you've earned it. That kind of helps me feel better when I reach the ballot box, that somebody in there has done something that I think is commendable enough to earn my vote. Then I don't feel bad about it's the lesser of two evils. Well, I got to vote for some evil. It's just the lesser one. No, it's the one that, it's kind of like the professor who, there are always professors that start with 100% and start taking off points. And then we'd have professors in school who would start with, you start at zero and then you have to earn enough points as you go. It's kind of that mindset, earn enough points as you go. I'm not automatically giving one of you my vote, and I'll just see who lost the most points. Mm-hmm. I kind of start at zero and say, which one of you earns the most points? And then that, I feel like, at least internally to me, is my very mild and minor way of telling that candidate, you earned my vote and you didn't. So I don't know.
Which is a little better than the better of two evils.
Yeah.
I appreciate that approach. Yeah, I'm totally with you there. And I think there's an idea of that I always have, and I think you probably have this too, there is no such thing as an ideal candidate
right.
in a two-party system.
Right.
Because sometimes there are positions that a party is taking that person has to stick with, even if it's not necessarily the most agreeable thing. So for example, you know, back to the pro-life thing, clearly there's one party that doesn't seem to love that idea and they try to paint it as a different thing. That's a problem to me. On the other side, when we look at nuclear warfare, for example, I've had people on the other side of the aisle say that, you know, Hiroshima and Nagasaki, those were necessary things to do and they were good in the grand scheme of things. And I'm like, I don't know that I can agree with that. We probably could have dropped the bomb offshore and shown them how big of a deal it really was without, you know, without eradicating a bunch of people. And I'm always a little nervous with war hawks in general, no matter what party they're a part of. You know, I would prefer peace in general. So there's a lot of things that I push back on sometimes, and individuals make comments from both parties that I just go, why do you hold that position? That doesn't match. And the struggle that I have is I would vote for Jesus every time mm-hmm. if that was on the ballot. Jesus is not on the ballot. We're dealing with human beings and the government system exists. And so I'm trying to live by that 1 Peter 2 ideal along with the Romans 13 idea of I'm subject to the government that I put into office. So therefore, I'm going to vote in a direction, hopefully that lines up with me more than someone else might. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, nobody wows me to the point where I am all in on them, which is why we don't back candidate, which is why we don't necessarily talk about individual parties as the end all be all of things, because they always fall short. If they haven't in your life yet, you weren't paying attention. There are things that both parties do that are unbelievably disappointing, and none of the side parties have any real say in the elections whatsoever. So even if you found a candidate, you go, this person matches every single one of my things, vote for them, but there's no chance they're going to win.
Yeah. Yeah. Because one of the challenges, right, is that we have a two-party system. So every viewpoint, every political issue gets boiled down to one of two positions, you know, not the nuanced positions, which I love nuance. And then on top of that, they're all batched together in two separate buckets. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you can't pick one side on one thing and one side on the other and back and forth, and back and forth. Like, no, it's this whole list of things here and this whole list of things there. I don't love that. I think I like some other countries and some other systems, how they do it, but it's not really worth getting into that because it's not our system.
And I think that goes back to the beginning of this thing. It's not my kingdom, but it's the kingdom I live in.
Yep.
So I can love other countries and how they do it, but there's no point. And at the end of the day, sometimes those countries have issues all themselves as well, you know?
Yeah.
So, okay. So I've got these things written down. We'll review in a minute. Is there anything else that you do? I mean, I think – for me, I go and vote.
Yeah.
That's a big one. And then I deal with whatever comes. And if I have not loved a lot of the candidates that have won elections, but they're in my state, they're in my district, they're my president, they're my whatever, at the end of the day, I don't have to love them, but I pray for them and I hope that the Lord is going to speak to them louder than the voices in their ear.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, yeah, we pray that the Lord would work because the Lord can use people in those positions to do his will. And also they can throw their hands in with evil and do evil. And either way, they're not my first hope. So just trusting in the Lord and praying that he works.
Exactly. Well, I think that's a good start. So kind of to review, you know, first of all, be thankful that you live where you live. There's something to be said about our system and our government. It's not great, but you can be thankful you live here. You have a vote. You have a say. That's great. I think second, really important, you can be thankful for this place, but remember it is not your first kingdom. It is not your home. So let's have hope that God is doing something that we can't even see. Then I think do your research, and as you do your research, vote. You know, follow through with what you just researched and do what you feel best about. Instead of lesser of two evils, do your research and vote for the best of the two candidates that you think. Even if other people don't agree with you, you have every right to vote your mind, speak your piece, do your thing. But then pray for our leaders because they are in a really tough position. As soon as they're put in positions that we would never know what to do with. And even though we hate their answer to whatever the problem might be, you weren't the one given the option. So let's pray for them that they have wisdom. And I think kind of the closing thought that I would throw out is We do believe that God is in control. We believe that he is in charge. Even if things don't go well, he might be using that to accomplish his purposes in the long run. So trust that even if things aren't matching up where you want them to be, he's going to win in the end.